You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, December 9th, 2024. Grandpa Dan streaming with you at RadioAlbion.com, kicking off another work week. It is another Monday. Unfortunately, we're not going to do Daily Mail Monday. It's something I've been looking forward to week in, week out. I really enjoy doing Daily Mail Monday, partially because it's kind of low effort on my part. There's always fun material to be found in the Daily Mail. But of course, we're not going to do that today. We got to talk about the events that have unfolded in the past past week or so in Syria. And of course, we have an ongoing inside joke here at Radio Albion that every time Matt Johnson takes off, big world event, big geopolitical events take place. I just left a message for Dr. Johnson. I said, would you please stop initiating world events by taking time off? Would you please? Because like literally, I think the last time he took off was when the Russian special military operation in the Ukraine kicked off. I mean, it's like every single time he takes off. I don't know. Coincidence? I'm starting to think not. So we don't have Dr. Johnson with us this week because he's got things going on. He took some time off. He will be back before too long. It's not like he's gone forever. Y'all bear with me. But because we don't have Dr. Johnson with us here, you're going to be stuck with my non-expert opinion. But it's a fun take. And I do think, you know, there's certain things that I look at and we can observe. I don't claim to be our geopolitical expert. That goes to our own Dr. Johnson, and we all look forward to his take when he gets back. In the meantime, we are going to discuss this, and we're going to look at it, I think, in a lot bigger picture than, of course, anything you're going to get from the mainstream media, and just kind of see how all of this has played out and what we can discern, because there's a lot going on here, than way more than the slop of what the media has portrayed. Right off the bat this morning on the network news, I watched my 90 seconds of propaganda, otherwise known as All You Need to Know in 90 Seconds. And of course, it's just ridiculous, you know, it's just ridiculous slop for the masses to ingest. It has nothing to do with reality or the truth. And they're portraying this as, oh my gosh, Syrians are in the streets celebrating because the evil, yes, they used this term, the dictator Assad is finally gone. Joe Biden, or at least one of the Joe Bidens, came out and made a statement on this, you know, that he's responsible for the murder and torture of hundreds of thousands of Syrians. We're all supposed to ignore the fact that you mean the guy up until, I guess, obviously very, very, very recently enjoyed overwhelming support in Syria. You're not supposed to, you don't need to know that. That's not going to go in the 90 seconds. You don't need to know that. He had overwhelming support among the people. And then they run out there and it's always funny how they try to set these narratives. You have the reporterette on the ground in Syria, and there's guys standing out there waving assault rifles around, you know, waving AK-47s around, shooting them in the air, and there's people in the streets dancing around, and they're like, look how happy everybody is. I mean, as if you don't have the common sense to go, well, if some group of people came in and overthrew your government, and they're all out in mass in the streets waving machine guns around, or at least waving rifles around and shooting them off, I don't know, but you're going to go in the streets and go, these are our guys. Yes, I was on your side all the time. That's what the ordinary people are going to do, because they don't want to get shot with those rifles. It's as simple as that. And yet the media stands out there with their photo ops and they're going, look how Look how thrilled the Syrian people are. They're thrilled to death. No, they're not. They're surviving. The armed groups come in. The leader flees. The government is toppled. Of course, they're going to be on the streets and going, we were with you all the time. It's what normal people are going to do. And that they try to portray this as finally the Syrian people are celebrating in the streets because they've been liberated from the dictator Assad. It never ceases to amaze me, the slop that they feed to the masses, the media slop that they feed to the masses. It's so disingenuous. It's just such obvious Hollywood level drivel. We don't do that here. Now, one of the things I haven't heard mentioned a lot, again, this is just a recent happening, so there hasn't been a lot of commentary on it yet. There undoubtedly will be as in the next few days. But one of the things I've seen noticeably absent is the discussion of the obvious deals that have taken place here. This, unlike the media narrative, this didn't just happen. I remember when ISIS first stepped on the world stage and all these guys and all these Toyota pickups, you know, just appeared out of nowhere, trained, well-armed, obviously well-funded. They come rolling across the desert and the media is going, nobody saw this coming, which is obviously absolute bullshit. They just came out of nowhere, like they sprung up out of the ground. Well, you see hints of that narrative with this. Nobody predicted this. Nobody. This just caught everybody on the world stage blindsided. Why the rebels suddenly, the rebels, you know, Al-Qaeda people, CIA groups, Turkish elite. We're going to get into that here. But, you know, the rebels, to use their word, the rebels, the freedom fighters. Suddenly, they got their act together and they've launched this lightning strike offensive because, you know, they're so intelligent. They launched this lightning strike offensive. They've got a leader that nobody's ever heard of before, but he's well-groomed, well-read, and obviously well-trained to do media interviews and pronouncements. He knows what to say. One of the more laughable things was this pronouncement of how diversity is there. They literally had this guy come out and talk about diversity is our strength, as our rebel movement of whatever. Diversity is our strength, and we're going to embrace the diversity of. And you're not supposed to notice any of this. You're not supposed to notice. Wow. What a coincidence. This guy just came out of nowhere and the rebels just suddenly, now they made a lightning strike offensive and they toppled the government in Damascus. And no one saw it coming out, though obviously a lot of people did see it coming. I'm not saying I saw it coming, but those in the know, those in power in different nations, not only did they see it coming, they took part in it coming. Now, obviously these groups, much of them, a big chunk of them are CIA operative groups, but their loyalties go all over the place. But we know these quote-unquote rebel groups, we know a lot of them are funded by the CIA. We all remember the story of ISIS being treated in Israeli hospitals, and like one time they accidentally, you know, got into a skirmish with the IDF and they came out and apologized later. Talking about narratives, one of these rebel leaders come out yesterday, I think it was, and talked about how we love Israel. Why we would never mess with Israel. Again, another just very strange coincidence, isn't that? On the one hand, the media tells you these are extreme Islamic groups, where they're very hardcore Muslims, and oh boy. Here they are, you know, with their head wrap on and their AK-47. They're in the back of the Toyota pickup with a 50 caliber machine gun mounted in the bed. The quintessential Islamic extremist. And then on the other hand, we're supposed to never notice that they never, ever, ever attack Israel. In fact, they're coming out now making statements about we love Israel and we want to get along just perfectly fine with Israel. How curious is that? Now, what people tend to do is they'll take stuff like this and they'll focus on that aspect. What's Israel? We know Israel is behind it. Or we know the U.S. is behind it. Or we know there's a lot. This is not how these things play out. this is large scale geopolitics, and there are a lot of players involved in this. And this is the angle you're not going to, of course, get on at the media hog slop trough that they're feeding the public on mainstream media or network news. Again, events are unfolding. There's a lot we don't know, but I think there's a lot we can put together. We have to do that theorizing thing because we don't have very much information. But if you step back and look at the big picture, I think there's a lot you can take away. One of the key takeaways for me, one of the key hints here, when this unfolded in the manner that it did, is recently Iran, Turkey, and Russia did a meeting about Syria. They met up to talk about the quote-unquote situation in Syria. Well, obviously, deals were being made. It's not just the U.S. and Israel. They're a part of it. But the other players in the region are also, they were also coming together and making a deal. We know Turkey has been a big force in this, pushing and training and supporting these quote-unquote rebel groups. There's a lot of players and a lot of deals got made for this to happen. You know, Iran never sent in a large amount of reinforcements to support the Syrian government. Why is that? Russia did not send any forces to support the Syrian government. Why is that? Deals were made. I think when this kicked off, Assad, the previous leader, the now former leader of Syria, was in Moscow when this kicked off. And many people took note of that. You know, the timing. You know, perhaps they chose to kick this off intentionally while he was out of the country. I tend to believe that when he was in Moscow, he was getting the news. In other words, when he was meeting, I presume with Putin, when he was in Moscow, he was sat down and he was given the news. A deal has been made and you're leaving office. If that is so, and I suspect highly it is, and just judging by the way this has all played out, can you imagine in a way how humiliating that would be to be the leader of a country and you go over and you sit down for a meeting and you find out that the topic of the meeting is you're not going to be the leader of the country anymore. These bigger players have made a deal and this is what's going to happen. Now, you can go along with the deal or face the consequence. But this is what's going to happen. We're letting you know. As this plays out, I believe we will find out who got what out of these deals. A lot of deal was done with a lot of players for this to come into play. It was curious the way as this kicked off, you know, the different things that happened. It's a pretty obvious elements of the key elements of the Syrian military itself were paid off because they, by and large, basically stood down. There was very, I mean, there was fighting, but to be rolled through like this, come on now. The Russians did some air strikes, or at least we were told that. I haven't seen any actual video of it. I'm sure that maybe there's some out there. But they did some air strikes, but that was kind of it. It was almost just like window dressing. Oh, look, the Russians are doing their part to support Assad by doing some air bombing of the rebel groups, which obviously miraculously somehow didn't actually do anything. Sides of early on deals, Israel has been doing for years, has been doing airstrikes in Syria when there's Russian personnel there arming anti-air missiles. And yet not a single Israeli plane shot down by the Russians. Curious, isn't they? The Russians set up, make a big show of setting up anti-air defenses in Syria, but don't actually ever use them. It's like it's all for show. Why wouldn't they use them? Well, because a deal has been done. You know, we're actually not going to do this as long as you don't strike our people. There's hints of deal doing all over. Russia came out recently and said, oh, we're... The rebels have promised to protect our military bases. There won't be any attacks on our military bases. We're keeping our naval base there in Syria. We're keeping that. It won't be any sort of problem. That's not happenstance. That's deal making. When this really got kicking off, why the Russian ships at the base just so happened to be out doing some exercises. They weren't home right now. You can understand why that would be. You know, because the guys on the ships, you know, the grunts, so as to speak, you know, they're not in on the deal making. Somebody may freak out and go, oh my gosh, this is going on. I better launch some missiles or something. So they send them out. Even the captain of the ship is probably not going to know there's deal making going. So they just send them away. So nobody gets excited and escalates and does something and screws up the deal. As I say, as this plays out, we're going to find out who got what. That's what I think is the key thing to look for. Forget the media slop trough they're going to try to feed you. Just watch and look for hints of who got what in the deal. That is what's going to be interesting. As time plays on and events play out, of course, the media will portray this as happenstance. Look how this happened to have played out. Those are going to be the deals. You're going to start finding out who got what. It'll be interesting. There's a few things that we can already discern. Russia's keeping its naval base there. In fact, it looks like more or less as far as Russia's standpoint, the status quo for them remains the same. For the U.S. angle, I believe the U.S. angle of this is they were really hoping that maybe perhaps Russia would send some troops and provide some relief on the Ukrainian front. Much like the objective with the whole Kursk fiasco. And they didn't take the bait. If that was the intention, they didn't take the bait. They didn't divert any force. And why would they? When the Syrian army is obviously just basically, for all practical purposes, standing down, why would Russia send in troops? So if that was one thing, again, we don't know. There was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of theorizing here because that's all we can go on. But for Russia's point, the status quo has remained. You know, they're not fleeing Syria with their tail between them. It looks like they're going to maintain their naval base and pretty much what they had already going on. Now, Assad has left the country. He is gone to Russia. He's gone to Moscow. And I think this is one of the little more, I guess, in the big picture of things, one of the minor deals that I see was done as far as Russia's part. And I believe this probably, you know, Putin himself, you know, Assad's not going to be given the Gaddafi treatment. I think this is one of the Russian angles of the deal is Assad is not going to be given the Muammar Gaddafi treatment of being drugged through the street and brutalized and murdered in public. I think that was one of the deals. Now, obviously, if I'm correct, and when Assad was in Russia, when this kicked off and was sat down and explained this is what's going to happen, I'm sure one of the probably unsaid details was if you don't accept this and you go back to Syria and refuse to stay till the very end, we can't guarantee your safety. However, if you accept this, that this is what's going to happen regardless, you can come here. You can come to Moscow. You're going to be fine. Your family will be fine. You're not going to be given the Gaddafi treatment. This is one of the things we negotiated on our behalf, is that you're not going to be treated this way. Which, I mean, I'm grateful for that. One of the things I find sad about this is just what little bit I do know, you know, and have read and stuff about Assad himself is, I mean, he just seems like, honestly, overall, just kind of a pretty good guy. You know, I mean, everybody's flawed, obviously. But I mean, he's just kind of one of those people. He never wanted to be the leader of the country in the first place. He might have been glad to be sat down and given this deal. He never wanted the job in the first place. But by the way things played out, he got saddled with taking over running the country. You know, he didn't really ever want that job. And perhaps for him, this was a more or less welcome exit, you know, away from the pressure. Again, we just don't know. But I do think there's one of the elements of which you could say this is one of the more finer details that Russia probably negotiated out, that they're not going to make a spectacle of Assad. He can leave the country. And they did. You know, him and his family got out. I'm glad they did. The barbaric treatment of Muammar Gaddafi regardless of what you think of him, that is absolutely just barbaric. I cannot believe that they're, well, I can believe, you know, unfortunately, but the way Russia, or I'm sorry, the way the U.S. reacted when, you know, what was done to Gaddafi and the way he was killed and acting like this was somehow some sort of clever thing is disgusting. Anyway, everybody involved here got something out of the deal. Israel's already moved into their part of Syria they wanted to move into anyway, is obviously what they were angling for. But as time goes on, again, I think one of the key things to do is look out for who got what in the deal. These things are not going to play out as a matter of happenstance or as a matter, oh, they're reacting to this. This was all hashed out in the early stages, perhaps even months or years. We don't know. We're going to find out as time plays on. Turkey was a major player in supporting these groups. What are they going to get? Time will tell. My suspicion is they will carve out a part of Syria, and the Kurds will no longer be in that part of Syria. The Kurds are playing somewhat of a role with this quote-unquote rebel alliance or whatever you want to call it. And the Kurds, I'd swear, the Kurds are like the... the Kurds are the Polacks. They're the Poles of the Middle East. They never cease to make bad... Anyway. My suspicion is that Turkey, what they're going to get out of this, they're going to carve off a piece of Syria and there will no longer be any Kurds in that area. That's just, I guess. It remains to see what Iran got out of this deal. Because Iran is another major player that sat down, was a part, no doubt, a part of working out how this was all going to take place. We have yet to see what Iran is getting out of it. They're getting, but I guarantee you they got something. Again, these are what we're going to look for. As time rolls on, we're going to keep an eye out and watch to say who got what. They obviously got that. None of this is going to happen just by chance. You're just going to see as events unfold, all this plays out, we're going to see who got what out of this deal. We have yet to see what Iran has gotten out of the deal. We can see a few aspects of what Russia got. They're keeping the status quo as far as they're concerned. They didn't divert any forces away from the Ukraine front. Did they get, I've saw a lot of people, I've seen quite a few people speculating that they were, if they gave up Syria, you know, the U.S. is going to give up on the Ukraine thing. They're going to get, I saw one person say Ukraine, they're going to get Ukraine by giving up Syria. I think that's a simplistic view. I don't think the West is necessarily ready to abandon that project, or at least there's an internal debate among Globo Homo on that front. I think that's an overly simplistic view. But like I said, we can see a few early things of what they got. I'm pretty sure they did negotiate that Assad's not going to be given the Gaddafi treatment. They're keeping the status quo of what they've got there now. I mean, really, just from a pragmatic standpoint, Russia's lost nothing out of this. I mean, yes, they've lost the Assad government as an ally, but as far as what they were contributing and what they were getting out, I mean, I don't really see much that Russia has lost. The pipeline is probably going to wind up taking place. This is one of the early things that was a issue, a component of this, the pipeline going up to feed Southern Europe. That will probably take place. People are going to make money off of this. I'm curious if a part of Syria is going to be carved off and the Palestinians will be pushed over into there. It remains to be seen. These are the things, though, I think are going to be key in watching out for. Look to see what deals, look what, as events transpire over the coming weeks and months and even years, we should keep in mind, you know, these are deals that have been made. Perhaps there's going to be an area of Syria carved out. The Palestinians will get pushed off into there. We don't know. Again, we don't know what Iran has been, what they got out of this, but they got something. They didn't just sign on to the deal and they're not getting anything out of it. They got something. some elements of these deals are going to be things that we're never going to hear about. They're things behind the scenes, money transferred or certain deals where we're not going to push you over here if you'll go along with things that we're never going to actually hear about. But there will be things, if we look at them in the context of deal making, we're going to understand, well, they got that as part of a deal for going along with this. This whole rebel uprising and lightning fast strike, that's just Hollywood bullshit that they're feeding people, because especially Americans view everything in the view and the context, rather, of a Hollywood movie. And they're real easy to sell this stuff on. It's like a Hollywood movie. My gosh, these people came out of nowhere and did a blitzkrieg. And they just... No, this didn't in any way happen out of nowhere. We're going to watch. We're going to see who got what out of this. And by the way, things transpire. Why, by the way, things take place. As far as the U.S. angle, they already occupy these oil fields in Syria. They've been doing that for years. Set up bases there. If international law meant anything, which it doesn't, it's a stupid concept. I don't know. I probably shouldn't get off on that side tangent, but isn't that just the most ridiculous concept in the world? International law. We have to uphold international law. International law. The U.S. has been occupying those oil fields. Why? Because they have guns and weapons and bombs and nobody's going to tell them to leave. That's international law. That's a reality. Otherwise, it's just PR campaign crap. It's just rhetoric to throw out there. They're in violation of international law. No one cares about that. It doesn't exist. If you got enough guns and you got enough bombs and you got enough military strength, you can do whatever the hell you want. There is no such thing as international law. The U.S. already occupies those oil fields out. They'll probably set up some sort of rump state there and call it something. Maybe. Who knows? But they'll set up something and they'll keep pumping the oil out and, you know, the profits. The American people will not see lower gas prices. That's not the point of these things. They're going to pay each other off. The corporations will make a higher profit margin. Everybody involved in the government apparatus and whatnot, they'll all get paid. They'll all pay each other off. They'll all pocket the money and we'll all keep paying too much for gas and for everything else. There's an aspect of what the U.S. will no doubt get out of all of it. Now, just like all of these deals that get made, whether domestically or internationally, there's one group that never gets a seat at the table, and that's the regular people. You see, the Syrian people themselves, they're just, if anything, they're just a footnote. I mean, there'll be certain things that have to be dealt with because that's like a trivial side matter, but they don't get a seat at the table. There's like, we don't get a seat. I always laugh whenever I read some commentary about the corrupt U.S. government and somebody finishes the article of, this is why we have to speak up about this now and make our politicians understand that we don't approve. You don't get a seat at the table. The American people, any of the citizens of any of these countries, especially any of these democracy countries, have no say in what their government policy is. None. If you doubt that, ask yourself, when was the last time the U.S. government changed policy because people protested? Never. And now they're cracking down. They really don't even want to let you protest anything. So the people themselves, they don't get a seat at the negotiations. They don't get a say. They don't get anything out of it. As is usual, the Syrian people will get nothing out of it. If they get to keep what little they have and their lives somewhat intact, then they better be happy with that. The big players don't get a seat at the table. Again, I already mentioned the Kurds. I suspect once again, they throw their hat into these things. They jump in and take part of these things thinking, we're finally going to get our Kurdistan. And once again, they will get screwed over. They're a slow learning bunch. As I said, the U.S. will continue to pump oil out of the oil fields. The American people aren't going to get anything out of it. They're not going to get a drop in inflation or at least cheaper fuel prices. But people at the negotiating table, people that are in the in circle, they're going to get richer. Even though they're already rich, they're going to get even they're going to get even more wealthy. See this play out everywhere. All these billions that are being laundered through the Ukraine. All these people on the American side, in Europe, in the Zelensky regime, they're all lining their pockets. What do the Ukrainian people get out of it? Dead. That's what they get. They don't get anything. If they can avoid the press gangs that are going to go throw them in the meat grinder, that's about as good as they can expect. They were lucky enough to get the hell out before all that started. Bless their hearts. But that's it. If they escape with their lives, that's the most they can hope for. Everybody else is lining their pockets. The people themselves, they never get anything out of these deals. They never even factor in. Now, I've talked today about some of the obvious players in this deal making. It's quite possible, and maybe even likely, there's other players that have been more behind the scenes. And as we watch these things unfold, we'll get an idea who some of these other players are. If, you know, as things play out, Saudi Arabia suddenly starts getting some things that benefit them, we'll understand they had more of a role in this. I already mentioned the pipeline. You know, they'll have a role. They were playing a role in the deal. There's lots of players here sitting down. They've been meeting up. They've been negotiating, carving up what was once a country. You know, and we'll see as certain things play out, because again, none of it's going to be happenstance. As these things play out, we'll get an idea of who else was a player in this. Again, we have the obvious players that we've mentioned already. As things play out, again, not by happenstance, we start seeing other countries, other players start benefiting it. That was planned out. That was part of the deal. They just weren't more of the public aspect of the deal making. I was talking about, you know, the Russians, and like, you notice nobody's mentioned, like, where did the stuff go? The Russians had air defense systems, S-300s, and I believe 400s, set up round and about in Syria and Damascus. You know, there's no mention of where did those go. Did the Russians flee and leave them sitting there, and now the quote-unquote rebels have control? No mention of that. Because, of course, the media hog slop trough apparatus, they're not curious about that at all. That's not for you to hear, but you just need to hear about how the Syrian people are so glad to be finally liberated from the evil dictator in our Hollywood production. Where did they go? They had S-300s and 400s set up all over the country, allegedly, for air defense, which they never actually used. Israel could just bomb Syria at will. But where did they go? No mention of them. Where are they? Do the rebels have control? No. When were they pulled out? Gives you an idea of when the deal was coming together. They were, because these things take time. You know, it's like how people have this vision. You know, for example, what we're talking about today, the rebels and their lightning strike advance. They imagine like armies just move on their own. Do you know how much food it takes to feed an army? A lot. Who's cooking for them? Where's the food coming from? Where's the fuel coming from? Everybody looks at things like ammunition and weapons. That's the obvious stuff. But about the food, water, logistics. These are huge elements. You don't just move a massive army like they just jump in their Toyota and take off running and get as far as they can. It takes a lot. It takes a lot. We see these Russian assets that were there, these S-300, 400 systems, they don't just up and move them like in a day. Those things took a long time to move, and obviously they were being moved a long time ago, weeks ago, those were being pulled out, getting ready for the rebel advance. Maybe that's why Assad went to Russia. Maybe he went to ask Putin, hey, what are y'all doing here? How come y'all are moving all this stuff out? And that's when he got sat down and told, well, a deal's been made, and this is what's going to happen. You got a choice here. You can go ahead and grab your family and come on here. We'll let you stay here. We negotiated that you wouldn't be given the Gaddafi treatment. Or you can be stubborn about it, refuse to accept it, and go back to Damascus, and we can't promise you anything. Moving all those Russian assets, those S-300s and 400s, that takes time. It is not going to happen overnight. And yet there's no news of where they're at. There's no pictures, no videos of the rebels standing on top of them with their AK-47 shooting them off in the air. So they were pulled out. And again, these things take time. So they were pulled out some time ago. Again, not that they were doing anything anyway. Israel's been bombing Syria for years with impunity. Why? You see low IQ people on the internet and they're like, oh, because the Russians are a bunch of sissies. I try to keep family friendly here. You see, oh, the Russians, people say, well, why aren't the Russians shooting down these Israeli jets? They set up all these air defense systems. Well, because the Russians are a bunch of sissies and they're scared of America and they're scared of God's chosen people, Israel. No, they're not. They made a deal. They were getting something. These people are all making deals. Just because we don't have a seat at the table doesn't mean deals aren't getting made. I mentioned these supposed rebel leaders talking about how they love Israel. One of them said something like, you know, our beef is with Iran. And yet, we're not seeing any videos of Iranian diplomats or Iranian citizens being drugged through the streets or anything, are we? Why? Because deals have been made. And again, as we wrap up, I think the important thing to do is this continues to play out to get a better grasp of the geopolitical aspect of this is to look to see who got what. None of this is going to play out as happenstance. These things were negotiated in advance. And if you want to find out who the players are and what they got out of the deal, well, just watch and see what they get. And all of a sudden, Turkey carves out a part of Syria and says, that's ours now, or that's a protectorate zone or a buffer zone, whatever the hell they decide to call it. You'll know that's what they got out of the deal. And so on with all of the other different players. That, I think, is going to be the way to watch this play out and understand, you know, better understand at least how it played out, the reasons why it played out, and who the key players are. We'll wrap up on that note. I appreciate you joining me. I hope you got something out of it. I'll be back tomorrow with the Paris of the Patriots program. As I mentioned before, Dr. Johnson's out of pocket for the time being. He'll be back shortly. And so no Orthodox Nationalist on Wednesday, no Dr. Johnson on Thursday. I will be back on Friday. It's kind of a sparse schedule here at Radio Albion this week. I appreciate y'all sticking with us. It's just Matt Johnson and myself. Y'all know that. We're just holding down the fort with Sven's absence. So things like this happen. We're out of pocket, and sometimes we have times when it's sparse. So again, I thank y'all for bearing with us with our kind of sparse programming schedule here this week, perhaps into next week. I'm not exactly even sure when Dr. Johnson will be back, but I know it'll be before too long. So thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for joining me today. And as always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.